Hello and welcome back to the Elastic Hour. It is season one. It's season one because season one is now season zero, and so season two is season one, and this is season one, which means it's not quite season two. That's basically the long and short of things. We basically decided amongst the three of us, and yes, Andrew is still here. We decided that he is still worthwhile.
For some reason.
Yeah.
We decided that it would be more efficient to take what was once season one and kind of not necessarily lessen it, but to make it more of a stepping
stone. A pilot.
A stepping stone, a pilot, if you will, yes. Because this season, we have plans. This season, we have aspirations. We have a dream in the distance. You can see it on the horizon, kind of like the border of a land you've never been to. And the plan that we have to give you guys, you listeners, a little bit of a window into our thought process here is one of the things at the heart of our second half of the first now zeroth season was the trilogy about Star Wars. And I don't really care if you guys liked that at all. We liked it, and we thought it was a good trilogy. And so we decided, well, what if we made the center point of our podcast these trilogies that have a through line through the season, so that the season has kind of a theme to it? And that's what we decided. We decided this season we're going to have a theme. And I'm not going to reveal too much about that theme, because I've been told by my supervisors, by my higher-ups, by my boss, that stays mum. Mum's the word on that. But I will tell you that we're going to have three trilogies at the heart of this season, and in between each of those trilogies to kind of prop up, in between each of those trilogies, to prop it up, we're going to have three one-offs between each, so six total one-offs. And the one-offs are going to be shorter, more lighthearted, probably completely unscripted. No, I'm joking about that. Maybe I'm not. Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. Most
we'll see when we get there.
Kind of.
This might actually sound unscripted, but it actually is somewhat. But without further ado, this episode, we are talking about the man, the myth, the legend, the owner of all of your futures, Jeff Bezos.
Yes.
And the through line for this season is going to be multi-billion-dollar companies and basically how they're run, and you know, the people at the head of them and stuff. And this episode is going to be about Jeff Bezos himself, and then we will get into, as we go along, more of his companies and his tactics and things like that. But to start this off, I have done a little bit of research here today, my fellow podcast friends Trey and Andrew. I've done some research. I don't know if you can believe me, but I have.
I'm glad you did, because I
barely.
We barely did research.
Yeah.
but I can assure you that my research is well-founded, and it is not from Wikipedia. It actually is.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, dang.
I'm joking. I'm partially dissing Trey, but not intentionally. I'm actually.
Wow.
But we're going to talk about, first of all, who is Jeff Bezos? Because some of you might actually not know who he is. I would be actually kind of surprised to hear that. Jeff Bezos, first and foremost, what you need to know about him is he is the owner and founder of Amazon. Not the river. We're talking about not the rainforest either. We're talking about the company, the e-commerce website that it started as a bookstore. But now, you know, it as you probably are aware, it ships you all sorts of things.
I did not know that it started as a bookstore.
Really?
Really, yeah, that's cool.
Okay, well, we'll get into that.
It was an online bookstore, wasn't it?
Because he thought that would be, well, we'll get to that. Anyway.
Yeah. All right.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Teaser.
But who is Jeff Bezos? He's an entrepreneur. He actually did not start business being, you know, like on the forefront of like a kind of a tech startup company, which I guess is what you could call Amazon. It isn't really a tech startup in the traditional sense, but it kind of is.
Yeah, a little bit.
He, in addition to Amazon, he is also the owner of, get this, guys, the Washington Post.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
he
crazy. Owned,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either. I did my research. I was like, this guy owns the media. He owns one of the media outlets that I like to digest. I am afraid for my life. He also owns
controlling your thoughts.
That is crazy.
but he also owns a he owns a space exploration company called Blue Origin, which we'll not get into at all this episode. So go cry about that later. And his successful business ventures have made him one of the most richest people in the world. That is completely grammatically incorrect.
Isn't he the richest man on the earth right now?
I want to say yes. I'm pretty sure
he might be the richest person ever. No, that's actually not true. But he is definitely the richest person in the world.
Yes, he's the richest person in the world.
As of today.
Do you have any idea what his net worth is?
I'm about to look it up, actually.
It's definitely in the multi, like the
196.6 billion as of July 13th.
Oh my god, bro.
That is ridiculous.
Which means if
it's
we kill him,
growing exponentially as well.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just like liquid assets and all that stuff. Like that's just, you know, that's what he's got. Or that's not counting liquid assets, I think. I don't remember exactly how net worth is calculated.
I would imagine if it was liquid assets, that means that's how much money he would have in cash.
It's his assets minus his debt. That's net worth.
But here's what we're going to go into real quick. Really quickly, I'm going to talk about who he used to be. So that's who he is now. I'm pretty sure that's all you really need to know about the guy. You probably know who we're talking about at this point.
Yeah.
He's a little bald. He's not a bad looking man. I think he's kind of handsome. But he used to have a wife. He did. He's a very interesting guy, though. Yeah, they're separated and divorced.
Everyone. And she is now like the fourth richest person in the world.
Because she got money from him, I believe. Yeah,
she got like half of the estate. Or
whatever. Oh my god, she got half of Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, yes. Well, she also kind of made Jeff Bezos.
But anyway,
that's a controversial topic.
That's I don't even know if we'll get into.
What are you talking about? She made Jeff Bezos. What do you mean?
Well, without her, he would not be Jeff Bezos. Like she was very integral in all of it. I think.
Really, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We need to stop.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, let me continue. Let's go to baby Jeff Bezos. Little baby boy Jeff Bezos.
Little baby man.
Little baby man.
He was also bald then. he was born in 1964 in New Mexico, which I think is a pretty cool state. I've never been there. I think it would be close to my top just to visit because it's called New Mexico. I don't know. There's just something interesting to that effect.
Yeah, it's cool. It's neat.
He had an early love of...
But it's like... It's new, you know.
Yeah. He had an early love of computers and technology, which makes a lot of sense because he's now owner of one of the largest tech-like companies in the world. He studied science and electrical engineering at Princeton University, which I believe is a New Mexico university. Home turf sort of thing. Might not be.
I think Princeton University is in New Jersey. I believe.
Oh yeah, I'm completely wrong. Is it in the Ivy League?
Yeah,
there might be a Princeton University in New Mexico, but I'm almost positive
University is New Jersey.
Okay, yeah. It's probably the Princeton University since they didn't specify. Which would make more sense. So after graduation, he didn't just go and make Amazon, right? Get this. He worked on Wall Street. Wall Street guy. Makes a lot of sense as to how he made money.
But that's crazy that he studied computer science and electrical engineering and worked on Wall Street. He didn't major in finance or anything.
Right. Was he like a stockbroker?
I believe he was. He worked at D.E. Shaw, right? So I'm pretty sure he was
what is
he
might D. not have been Shaw? A stock.
What?
It's an investment firm.
It's basically it's one of the biggest investment firms. It's a very well known one. So I'm pretty sure that he was basically an investor. So more or less, he was a Wall Street guy. And in 1990, he was the youngest senior vice president at the firm.
Whoa, that's impressive.
It is. So I mean, he definitely got a head start. But
obviously, he was a smart guy then. I mean, it's
actually. He actually worked at several firms, so we're going to talk about his early career now. So moving away from young Jeff Bezos, and I mean, he was born in New Mexico to what I believe was like just a fairly normal family. Like his family wasn't, you know, anything to
typical middle class. It wasn't whatever.
Yeah, and but after graduating from Princeton, he worked at several firms on Wall Street. D. Shaw is where he got most of his kicks in, and where he was most notable. But he worked at Fitel. He worked at Bankers Trust or Fitel. I don't really know.
I think it's Fitel.
I'm pretty sure it's Fitel. Bankers Trust. And then he worked at D.E. Shaw. His career in finance was extremely lucrative. Yep. But then he was like, you know what? I'm going to go into e-commerce. Okay. This was in 1994, which
that is risky.
And that's exactly what all of my research was talking about. It's like this guy basically made a huge risk.
He invested in the internet before the internet was the internet.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. Dude. That's crazy. Well, that's how you do it though, you know?
He went into the untapped potential of the internet. He went, I'm going to start and market an online bookstore. I want to put brick-and-mortar bookstores behind us, basically, is what his thought was. He opened Amazon.com, named after the river. So it is named after the river in South America in the old rainforest there. And on July 16th, 1995, he asked 300 people, 300 friends of his, to beta test the site. They developed it, key point here, in his garage.
Oh my gosh.
It's always the garage, man.
Who was the other guy that did that?
It was Bill Gates and
Steve Jobs, Apple. Wasn't it?
Yeah, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, Steve Jobs started Apple in his garage.
I think a lot of people with the tech startup. I think it's just a tech startup thing. So maybe we need to get a garage, actually. And here's the
idea. we don't need to take coding classes. We just need a garage.
Yeah. We don't just need a garage. Basically, the initial success of the company was gigantic. It was astronomical because he had no press promotion. He beta tested it. He got it off the ground. He launched it. And within 30 days, it sold books across the United States and in 45 foreign countries. And in Whoa. 2 months, sales reached $20,000 a week.
That is crazy, dude. $20,000 a week.
And I don't know if you guys have seen these videos on YouTube or like on meme pages or things, but I've seen a couple of these videos where it's like, oh, here are the most popular, video game consoles or the most popular, you know, tech companies or something like, and it just does a timeline and it's a time lapse of it over time. And then it'll be a bar graph and they'll move. Right. And actually I watched one and Amazon shot up, like it shot up as soon as it went public. When it went public in 1997, market analysts basically, they were like, listen, this company's not going to be able to hold its own. Because traditional retailers, they're going to launch e-commerce sites. And of course, many of them have. They've gone online and they've gone, okay, we've got, e-commerce portions to our bookstores. We'll mail you books. We'll send you books. But it didn't just keep up. It also outpaced competitors and it still does. It is the e-commerce leader.
Without even having any stores also, as far as I'm aware, right?
No.
I mean, I think they own a Whole Foods, but there's no like Amazon stores.
No. But they have a complex network of basically like return stations, and they actually use other brick and mortar stores that have like return outlets for Amazon, and I think they pay them to do that. And then they just have like warehouses full of shipping. And so it's basically just what it is to me, if I had to kind of classify it, is I believe that it is infrastructure. Like it is modern infrastructure at its most like applicable.
Efficient.
Yeah. Yeah. Because basically it's going, okay, you can say that you want something to my company. Okay. And it can be anything now. It's not just books, and you will have it in 2 days. Not bearing ulterior like circumstance.
If it is a prime item, though.
Well, yeah, if it's a prime item, and there are a lot of prime items, might I say, though.
Yeah.
And basically, here's the deal. I'm gonna go into how he runs his business, and this is the part that I'm gonna take a turn and go into the hot take territory.
Ooh.
Jeff Bezos is one of these human beings that I think it would make like an excellent study, because like this is a guy that we don't know. The three of us do not know him. Most of the people, probably pretty much 90% of the people, 99% of the people even who listen to this will have not known him, and only know him by whispered words on the internet and a couple pictures of him looking his best, right?
Yeah,
right.
I'm not trying to say that this guy is secretly a monster or anything, but I do think that when you get people with this much money and power, they have like really, really complex personalities that I think could be unpacked. And I did a little bit of digging. And this is digging with anonymous people who've like worked with under him and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm gonna go through this in kind of an order that I think makes sense. So I took some anecdotes here. When he made Amazon, before he settled on Amazon, he toyed with naming the store MakeItSo.com, and this is gonna thread into something here. Okay. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Star Trek.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yes.
But
yes.
Make It So is what Captain Jean-Luc Picard in Star Trek
The Next Generation.
Next Generation would always say to his first mate on the ship. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you guys haven't watched Star Trek, don't lose me. Don't lose me here. Okay.
Okay. No, I'm here. I'm still here.
He wanted to use the phrase because he couldn't contain his longstanding enthusiasm because he idolizes Captain Jean-Luc Picard. So that's part of his childhood also merging in here. He was born in 1964, which is prime time for Next Generation, because I'm pretty sure Next Generation was in, he watched the original Star Trek probably, like, right along the time when it was on TV and airing and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Next Generation was, like, in the early to mid-80s.
Yes, right. And so he was, like, right there when it came out, and people loved it, because they were the original Star Trek fans, you know? He loved all of these shows, right? He has a holding company called Zephram, which honors the character who invented the warp drive in Star Trek. He persuaded the makers of the film Star Trek Beyond to give him a cameo as a Starfleet official. You can see him in the movie. He's a Starfleet official.
Really? He basically bribed them and was like, yes, yeah,
he was like,
I will be in this movie.
Right, and they were like, we're not going to turn you down if you're offering us, like, you know, X sum of money. And this leads into something. This is a type of guy that has huge aspirations because he's always been a Trek fan. He's always been a space nerd, and I'm teasing a little bit for the future here because he also has a company dedicated to space called Blue Origin, and a lot of people close to him that have given out these statements are like, this guy's shooting higher. Like, the e-commerce thing is definitely a big deal of his, but this is the kind of guy that in conversations with him will say things like, you know, you have to shoot for the stars. Like, humanity is destined to leave Earth, and it'll become like a tourist attraction. I believe that was a thing that he was quoted as saying. But that also comes into territory of, what is he actually like as a leader of his company? If he is this fanatically devoted to dreams of space travel, and, you know, he really wants to shoot for the moon, basically, what is he like in practical terms? And a lot of people have said that he's not the mellow sort of leader. He's not, you know, he's kind of a hard ass, basically, a lot. He lashed out at people a lot to meet high standards. I don't think that they're saying that he was, you know, really, really awful or anything, but he was really, really picky. He basically, here are some of the cutting remarks that people quoted that he would say. Are you lazy or just incompetent?
Oh my gosh.
This document was clearly written by the B team. Can someone get me the A team document?
Oh. Dang, dude.
And the best one. Why are you ruining my life?
That is...
What?
Wow, dude.
Yes. Now, Amazon has gone on record saying that these accounts are not reflective of Bezos' leadership style. This was the sarcastic, demeaning version of his endless questioning. And I would probably agree with that these are definitely anecdotal. They don't have context, you know, to them.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's clearly an intelligent dude. He's clearly very, very driven. And people have said, if you're going for a Bezos meeting, you're preparing as if the world is going to end. This is a former executive of, I believe, Amazon. And he says, you're like, I've been preparing for the last 3 weeks. I've asked every damn person that I know to think of questions that could be asked. Then Bezos will ask you the one question that you hadn't considered.
Wow.
And that's a testament to just, you know, how this guy thinks way differently, I think, than other people like that we would think, you know? And to kind of transition this and wrap it up into this, I'm going to open the floor up now and talk about, do you guys, first of all, do you have any questions? Because I do have maybe a few answers or none, who knows?
No, not really. I just, that's crazy. He's quite the leader.
He's a guy. Oh yeah. And to tack on to the end of that whole, kind of modeled by Star Trek thing, he you can find pictures of him when he used to have hair and stuff, but he actually made the decision, and he looks just like Jean-Luc Picard in a lot of ways now, and people have made that kind of comparison. And of course, you know, wouldn't it be great to be compared in looks to one of your heroes and things like that?
Yeah, right.
But to cap this all off, we're going to talk about now, how do we feel about it? And
I have a question.
Okay, sure.
Do you know what, like, do you know how many people are, like, in his personal life? Like, how, like, what type of, like, how many family members does he regularly interact with? Or does he just, like, a complete solo man at the top of the hierarchy? Or, like, do you know any of that?
I think that that's more likely the case. Because as we were talking about, and this isn't something I had necessarily considered, but we can definitely go into this. He does have an ex-wife, right? And I believe they're divorced.
Yeah.
And, I'm pretty sure that that's really the only family that
still around.
Yeah, I think so.
Does he have any children?
Well, let's just check.
Yeah, let's just look that up. I know that. While you're looking that up, I know that the divorce was like pretty controversial for a while, and it happened not too long ago. I'm pretty sure it happened like
controversial, like among
in the
who?
Sense, like. How much of his net worth does she get, and does she deserve it? And is he right to fight against her taking the amount that she is taking or whatever? Stuff like that. Like, yeah. You know, because there's a strong case to be made that she was there like from the beginning, I'm pretty sure. Uh-huh. And she helped him through all of this, like these risks that he took in terms of like quitting Wall Street to pursue the internet that wasn't even that was barely a thing.
Yeah.
And it paid off obviously really, really big for her and him. And she was, I don't know. It's like, she's been there from the beginning. So I'm pretty sure that the split was 50-50, or it might be, he gets like 55 and she's 45 or something like that. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, like, does she, like, her being there from the beginning, was she there to primarily just provide? I mean, I guess this is probably a question we don't really know, like, the answer to, but, like, did she actually contribute to making, like, Amazon or Blue Origin?
I don't know.
Or was she just, his only emotional support throughout that entire time?
That's what I don't know. I'm pretty sure from what I've heard, and it could just be like people that are pro whatever her name is, and anti Jeff, that she like strongly helped in the making of Amazon. I don't know if that
is
true.
Mackenzie Scott, by the way.
Mackenzie
Scott. That is right.
Okay. So, I don't know if Mackenzie offered any ideas or any input for Amazon, and if she was just like emotional support for this crazy man or whatever.
Yeah.
But she might have, I don't know. So that might be one of the cases, one of the proofs that she deserves a large portion of the money, of the net worth. And she did receive a large portion because she is like the fourth richest person in the world now.
Yeah, I mean, because she divorced Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. $196 billion net worth.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
He has four kids. Is four children.
Wow.
Three sons. One daughter who was adopted from China.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes. And that's the oldest son, the oldest is one of his sons, and he is our age.
So,
wow.
Do you know, like, what they currently do? Like, are they involved in Amazon? Or are they just like...
I doubt it. I really doubt it. I feel like a lot of these rich people, and not to classify, not to put him into a bracket, but he is a rich person.
Well, I mean, he is...
The richest.
He has enough money to uplift a third world country out of poverty single-handedly. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's been said that he has enough money to end world hunger. Like, I think there's a Twitter account that says, it's called, like, has Jeff Bezos decided to end world hunger today? And every single day it says, no, he has not.
Hmm. Well,
so he has a lot of money. Like,
yeah, well, it's also, like, just to kind of piggyback off that real quick, it's like, it's kind of difficult to, I mean, I don't know how much money it would take to end world hunger, theoretically, but I mean, with that, I would imagine it would probably take most, if not, like, all of the money that he has to do something like that. And
yeah, I don't know.
And, I mean, like, I think it would be kind of unreasonable to ask somebody to give up their entire fortune that they're worth, that they've worked their entire life for. But that does that mean that he should not, like, use a lot of his power to help? That's, I mean, I just want to make that one small point. That I don't really want to get into that discussion necessarily, but
a lot of people are saying, there's a lot of articles that are trying to dissect this, and they say that she was pretty integral to the origin story of Amazon, that she was the one who drove them to Seattle in 1994, that she was Amazon's first accountant and was involved very heavily in its transformation from a small online bookseller to the e-commerce behemoth it is today. That's a direct quote from the New York Times, really trustworthy news. But the other article that I was saying, it said that Amazon basically shot forward kind of immediately. And I feel like this is one of those cases where we're never going to know the whole picture. You know,
your side,
my side, the truth, what is it? That sort of thing.
It's like, could Amazon have been Amazon without her? Probably not.
Because I mean,
and she was there from the beginning.
And so they split off. And from what I can see, it was pretty cordial, and I don't know who has the kids. I would assume that she might. And she's also, interesting thing here, she's a novelist. She writes novels.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, yeah.
So that kind of makes sense why that kind of ties into the whole Amazon started as a internet bookstore.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2013, she posted a scathing one-star review on Amazon of The Everything Store, which is a book about Amazon by a guy named Brad Stone. And she said it was plagued by numerous factual inaccuracies and full of techniques which stretch the boundaries of nonfiction.
wow.
Oh. Yeah.
And that's feisty.
I mean, and with that, I mean, just to drop my thought about that thing in particular, that immediately, in my opinion, makes it to where there's a significant chunk of the book that is just factually incorrect.
Right.
Yeah, even if she's stretching the boundaries of what she believes, what her perception was, I think if she's willing to go so far to be like, this has major inaccuracies. Like, there has to be some kernel of truth to that.
Yeah, right. I would say.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I'm kind of interested in that I would like to talk about a little bit is that you said that Jeff, earlier, Harper, you said that Jeff Bezos would be a very interesting person to do a like sort of case study on, like the like to kind of analyze the psychology of somebody that would be in Jeff Bezos' position, because like, I mean, like we said earlier, he very well be essentially, I mean, effectively, he's kind of the king of the world up at the top of the Amazon hierarchy,
at least an example of what they're going to be, because I feel like that sort of position can get unseated pretty easily by a lot of different people, but I can exactly get where you're coming from, that this guy, he's at the top,
and like not only the top of the company, but he's also at the top of the public, like, perception. Like, everybody knows who Jeff Bezos is.
That was something that I read in this article, and by the way, the article that I've been referencing here, where I got most of the information here, was an article by The Atlantic called Jeff Bezos' Master Plan. Just want to cite my sources here. So here's something that was mentioned in the article that you just you got me to remember here. Jeff Bezos – wait, what did you just say? I'm sorry. I lost my train. What were you saying?
Everybody knows who Jeff Bezos is.
Okay, thank you. So they said in the article, not only does Jeff Bezos have a lot of net worth, but compared to other tech companies and other tech company gurus and kind of the king of castles over in those places, Jeff Bezos has public perception on his side, because despite whatever reviews come out or despite whatever kind of problematic things that happen, he has taken action to right those wrongs, to make public statements. When people said that workers were not getting paid well enough for the things that they're doing, and they were getting no time for bathroom breaks and stuff, Jeff Bezos upped the minimum wage by several dollars. He just went, okay, minimum wage up. There you go. And also we do have bathroom breaks. There were a lot of polls done, and people really like Amazon, and they like Jeff Bezos. They're like, yeah, Amazon's a good company. It's run well and stuff like that. And so I think when you are a person who has that much public perception on your side, whether cognitive or not, like whether people are actively supporting him or not, you've got to have a certain way of thinking. But what were you going to ask specifically about that, Trevor?
Well, I was just going to see in the position that Jeff Bezos is in, and him and a couple of other CEOs of other really giant tech companies, is that that is a position that very few humans in history have been in. You've been in a position where literally every single person, and this is also somewhat applicable to people in positions of political power, like President Donald Trump, or any of the presidents,
right?
Any of the big people who are splattered all over the media, they cannot go to say for us, if we wanted to hang out, we could just meet up and go eat at a restaurant somewhere and just eat in peace, right? These people cannot do that. They cannot go out in public. They cannot go and interact with society in the same way that we can.
Yeah, because they're essentially celebrities at this point.
Yes, and I'd really be interested to see what that specifically, and I'm sure there probably are studies that have done this, but what that does to the psychology of somebody, how does it feel to, because I'd imagine it either sounds like you're a king, or it would feel like you're almost not an outcast, but it's like, I don't really know how to exactly articulate it.
Here's the thing about it. Here's the thing specifically about Jeff Bezos and other billionaires that are basically celebrities at this point, like Elon Musk and Bill Gates, is they did not they didn't choose a career path or a life that's associated with being a celebrity or being a personality. They just became so successful that everybody knows who they are. You know what I mean? So it's not like he chose acting, where it's you're a celebrity, so you chose a profession, and if you anticipated on being successful, which you probably did, you wanted to be successful, at least successful, then you knew you were going to be a celebrity. But that's not to downplay the hardships or whatever that celebrities go through, but he didn't even choose that life.
And it's going into a scientific field or something. You go get a PhD in research or something. You might be well known in some scientific research circles, but you know that you're not going to be
a household name,
stopped on the street. You can still maintain a normal life as a normal person,
unless you're Dr. Fauci or whatever.
Fauci.
I don't know, Carl Sagan, I guess, something like that.
Carl Sagan
probably had a normal life.
And I really wonder, what does it feel like to be so on top of the world, to where everybody knows who you are, and I'm just really curious how it feels, because I've seen various studies before. After you have a certain amount of money, I think it's I think there was a study done earlier in this decade, in 2011 or 2012 or something. I can't remember specifically, but it said in the study, it was noticed, it was observed that the happiness of individuals was rising with their income. So like between $0 and $75,000, their happiness could gradually increase as you move up that income ladder. So people closer to 70. Yeah. Yeah. So their income will gradually increase. But once you reach above like the $75,000 per year annual income, there was like virtually no noticeable difference in people's happiness.
Yeah.
Above.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm really curious, like, how does all that money doesn't necessarily change the way that how happy he is.
Right. And I think at a certain point, finish what you were going to say.
And he's like up there at the top. I wonder, it must be lonely up there at the top because there are very few people that you have that so much power. So there's very few people who really understand the way that you act and the way that you operate. And even those that do, they're likely your direct competitors. So you can't even like,
you can't confide in them.
Yeah, you can't confide in them. You can't like, and so it's like,
right. And normal people, I feel like a lot of normal people, generally speaking, won't really question you. I mean, they'll think of you through this rose tinted glasses.
It's
you
like
know?
You're a god.
It's either you're a god or you're a villain.
Yes.
Right. And that's comic where villain. That's where when it comes into it, I think.
He kind of looks like Lex Luthor now that I think about it.
Oh God! No, the comparisons. I think when you get down to brass tacks, though, Jeff Bezos, and this is my working theory here. My working theory for this whole thing is once you overcome that money threshold that you're talking about, where happiness does not have any noticeable increase, I think something else starts increasing, and I think that's really it's like ambition, because everybody has plans. Right. And everybody wants to be happy. And I think everybody thinks that in some ways a little bit that money is going to make them happy. And in some ways that is a little bit true. Money can get you things that do make you happy.
Right.
But I think when you have all those things, you want more. Right. And it's a what next question. And then ambition gets translated into, I don't need money to make me happy. And so whether consciously or subconsciously, he has replaced this switch in his mind with, you know, instead of make more money to get more of the things that make me happy. I think for Jeff Bezos, it's hard to tell what it is. And that's the big question mark, I think, about this. If I were going to say it, I think that this is the type of guy who wants to do something ridiculously crazy for the human race. I think a lot of these people at the top are going to want that sort of thing because he said a lot of things about space. He said
a lot
of things about
his legacy.
Right. He said a lot of things about leaving the earth and things like that. And I think, you know, if you get a guy like Jeff Bezos, right, and he gets us off the earth and gets us into space colonies, and then his name gets forever written down as the person who saved Earth.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, that's the sort of thing that I think, whether consciously or subconsciously, he wants that, perhaps.
That, you know, I'm wondering, like, in terms of, like, you know, the question about, I'm wondering if it's that, or if it's possibly the question of, you know, once you reach a certain point, you know, money is no longer a question. So why would you, like, you know, you have to realize the pattern of getting more money isn't making me happier. So I'm wondering if what makes him happy, because, you know, he reached that point a long time ago of the maximum amount of money.
Probably almost instantaneously.
And then he reached the point where he can buy and has probably bought everything that he likes and will make him happy. So now you have to go into those intangibles, right? You know, those things that don't have a price, the things that you
exactly
you can't buy. So I'm wondering if the reason that he continued to build Amazon and his net worth was because that's the kind of thing that makes him happy. Like, working and building this mega corporation made him happy. That's why they keep branching out.
He's doing
out
it for the sake of doing it.
Well,
yeah,
that's
there's
that's
no necessary,
the kind of
not necessarily
thing,
an end goal in sight. He just like, this is fun. I get a dopamine hit every time my stock jumps up $100. I'm gonna keep doing this.
And that's why he like owns the Washington Post, and that's why he's starting. Owns Blue Origin and all these other things, and that's
he bought
why
the Washington Post.
Everything.
He bought the Washington Post, and this is interesting. He bought the Washington Post because I think they were about to go under, and he was like, no way, I'm gonna let his words, I believe, mostly. This is paraphrasing. I'm not gonna let a noble company that has been dedicated to telling the truth like that go under. I'm not going to let that happen because I can't. Right. And then he bought it and brought it back out of the ground and then took it and reworked it and put his management in. And largely, I don't think anything huge has gone on, but basically, like, he went in and he did a trip over to the Washington Post. And like one of the right after it was bought, one of the famous editors, I believe, or editor in chief had died. And he went to the guy's funeral, even though he had no clue who he was. And people were like, it was a little bit awkward, but he did it because he felt it was right. So I don't think that he's, you know, a bad guy. Evil. I think he's trying to do what's right. And if we microcosm this to kind of, to cap this whole thing off, let's microcosm this with something that I think will actually make sense. And we'll prove our kind of thoughts here. Take a video game. Take Minecraft, which is the best one I can think of right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the best one of ever, so whatever.
You play the game. And you get all these resources. And you get diamonds, which are objectively right now probably still the thing that everybody wants in Minecraft.
And right.
You have chests upon chests of diamonds, right? And you use those diamonds to build all of the wonderful things that you've had ideas to build, which is one of the big things about Minecraft. So you've built all this stuff, you got all the diamonds, you've got every other resource in droves, right? What do you do then? And I think, you know, I think we can all talk about this, which is to say that you're right. It's all intangible, because once you get to a certain point, you start to do things like, well, how can I change the way I play the game? And in his case, it would be, how can I change the way that I live my life using the resources that I have?
You know, yeah.
That sort of thing.
And if he is the kind of person, like, okay, whenever I think about that scenario in Minecraft, right, the first thing that I can think that I would do is continue building and continue just, like, you know, making my house even
expand better. Your empire.
Yes, exactly. So that's what he is doing, and that's what he does. So that makes me think that maybe that's what makes him happy, and that's how he progresses from the point of having, you know, chest upon chests of diamonds, right? And everything he could possibly want, he has or can have. So what, you know, continue to build, continue to do what he's been doing, and that might be the thing that makes him happy. That is maybe what fulfills him.
And to be honest, there you go. That's Jeff Bezos. As far as I could say, without meeting the guy, that's what I think he is. That's
you know what? There's a very easy, simple way to figure this out. Let's have him on the podcast.
Yeah, let's just hide him.
With that, an email. And you know, and yeah. Well, here's the thing. For that to happen, all you listeners out there, you got to go, you got to follow us on the Instagram and on the Twitters, and you got to go check out our new YouTube channel. And so, and you got to share this with your friends and your family and everybody you could possibly know. Share the podcast.
Anybody who's ever amazing. You know, anyone who's ever walked past your door, all of the dogs in your neighborhood.
That's what
encourage them and yourself to listen to it like 3 or 10 times, you know?
Here's another thing. I have found out that just putting the podcast on repeat, on silent, on my phone at night helps me sleep better.
Yeah.
So you guys should try that as well.
It's actually crazy. I noticed that as well.
Yeah, Andrew, right? Seriously.
Whoa. Stop a minute. Have we all put the podcast on silent, on repeat to help us sleep better at night?
Yes. I think we have.
That's a genius idea. No, but seriously, in all seriousness, go check the podcast out. Keep listening to it on Spotify. We've got it up on YouTube now, we should.
Yeah, it should be on Apple Podcasts. Right. It's obviously on Anchor.
Right, it's on Anchor. You know, the more you listen to it, the more we're going to get to be able to do this for you guys and to make the podcast better. And we've got lots of great plans in store for season 1 and beyond. We're going to have new posts coming out. We're going to have teasers of what's coming up in the future for this season and others potentially. And if you guys have suggestions, we're open to suggestions. We're thinking about doing a different season for the summer as well. We're teasing that idea, right, guys? We're kind of talking about that.
Yeah, we are.
We're thinking about it.
But
we got some things in the works behind the scenes that you guys we'll hopefully see soon.
Yeah. As of right now, though, go listen to it, share it, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and you know, any other social media. But those are really the only two we have. But you know,
I believe all of those.
Hour.
very important. You guys failed to mention that at Elastic Hour.
And if you have any, those are all at Elastic Hour. And if you have any suggestions for ideas for the podcast, you know,
DM us, email us at the
email us at elastichour@gmail.com. You know,
yeah, that's it.
And that's it. That's Jeff Bezos. That's the first episode of season one.
Yeah, if we can remember, we'll put all of those things down in what, like some sort of description. On YouTube, it'll definitely be on in the description.
I'm kind of hoping that we forget, because it would be really hilarious to just have
that would
blank
be really, really funny. Yes.
It'd be
but
hilarious.
We will try our best to remember that.
Thank you for tuning in. Yeah. Should I do a teaser for next episode, guys?
Just a little bit.
It's Amazon.
Yeah, that's a little teaser. Hopefully, guys, if you guys send us some tweets, you know, tweet at us and send us some DMs. See if you can figure out what the next episode is going to be and the next one after that. That's actually kind of that's a secret right now.
Right.
See if you can figure out what the third episode of this Jeff Bezos trilogy is going to be about. You guys might not know. You might figure it out. It might be obvious.
Who knows?
Just
anyway,
send us, you know, tweet at us.
Thank you for joining us on the Elastic Hour today. I have been Harper. My compatriots have been less than me. You know.
I'm Andrew.
I guess I'm Trey.
Whatever.